Blog Talk Radio.
Today, I am Silver Ray Fox, your host, and yes, I've got a new attitude. What about you? You know, I've discovered that every day you can find something that can absolutely impact how you think, something that will take your thoughts to a new level, reshape your paradigm, something that will accelerate your attitude. You know, I heard something the other day from the Think and Grow Rich Facebook page that I love. The quote went something like this: don't just work toward results, work toward change. Isn't that powerful? That thought has stayed with me, and I pondered it over and over and allowed it to just sink in. So now I ask myself about my day and things I'm pondering about my life. Do I need results in this area? Or do I need change? Sometimes a great result will do, but sometimes a change is what is needed. Wow. And this principle can be so effective in so many areas of your life, your work, your business, your home, your career, so many things. And here's an analogy that maybe you can relate to. Let's say you have a car and it's broken down several times in the last few months, and you get it fixed and it runs for a while, but then it breaks down again. Well, you got results, you know, when you got it fixed, it ran okay for a while, but now you're realizing that you, what you really need is another car, a change, a car that you can depend on, you know, something that changes the game, that takes away the worry and the stress and all the money that you keep throwing after it, hoping and trying to get results. You know, this makes me know that we sometimes need to stop trying to just fix stuff. We need to make a change. So is change on the horizon for you? It can be a good thing. Yeah, results or change. Ask yourself that important question. Both are great, but which is really needed? Well, I'm going to be talking with someone today who I know is going to impact you in both ways. My special guest today is Reverend Temple Hayes. She is a powerful force in ministry and making an impact on many social issues, too. I reached out to her recently after seeing some of the inspiring things that she's doing, and I am pleased to have her as my special guest on Foxology today. Welcome, Temple.
Oh, thank you, Silver Ray. It's indeed my pleasure to be with you and speaking about somebody that's a powerful force in the world. You're seeing a mirror. You're doing great work.
Well,
you're definitely doing great work. We're spiritual cousins.
Oh, wow. I love that. Well hi, cuz.
How neat.
Yes. Well, I am very excited to be talking with you today. I love the work that you are doing. It's inspiring. You are an amazing individual on this earth, and you've got such a a compelling story too. But before we get to that, I do want to talk about that. Share with everybody the current things that you're doing at Unity in ministry.
Well, it's just really a great time in our community in the heart of St. Petersburg. We have a global work in that we have live stream our video podcast in the library. So we have people joining us from Africa, from all over in various communities, and that's really beautiful. But we have an ongoing campus. We have basically a 24/7 campus. We have a cafeteria that's open 6 days a week. We have esteemed authors and speakers, and the whole idea is to bring in individuals and concepts that offer people tools rather than rules, because we know with where we are trending in our society and with our evolution in our humanity and with nature overall, that if rules worked, we would not be where we are today. Can I get an amen on that?
Amen.
And parents know this instinctively, that if I give a child a rule, well, I might as well just go ahead and tell them, well, just go ahead and do it then. Because if I tell you don't do something, it's going to come out because it's something's repressed about it. And so that's our number one spirit-led part, is to offer people tools and practical applications that they can actually go to the workplace. They can go home with their children or their best person, and they can apply things towards a greater life.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, we know it for societal purposes, of course, a lot of rules that are laid down, like, you know, stop at that stop sign and all kinds of things do really work. But I know exactly what you're talking about, and I want to go a little bit more in depth about that a little further along in the conversation. But I'm glad you said that right now, because I want people to understand that when you have that principle in your thinking, it's very hard to find yourself wanting to even be flexible enough to change. And so it is critical that we understand that life is so much bigger than a lot of the rules that we think are the ones that are supposed to work. But I want to talk about a quote that's on your website that's beautiful. And I know we all say something to that effect, but you've got a wonderful story to follow it. You said life wasn't always easy. And then you go on your website to talk a little bit about it, but I want to talk a lot a bit about it because you are truly an overcomer. And all of that you've been through in your life is certainly fleshing itself out now with such great sensitivity to others and love and embracing the true needs of humanity. So let's share with us, if you would, when you wrote that quote on your website, life wasn't easy, always easy, what kinds of things were coming to your mind?
Well, the deeper part for me in that expression is that psychologically, self-esteem, we're born with self-esteem through nature. You know, if one ever questions that, look at a little 5-pound dog and see where the self-esteem is in that energetically for that animal to bark at a huge rock boulder. We're born in nature with self-esteem. And if we have an environment that supports that, and we have the nurturing part, then it will continue to develop. We're all born unique and gifted individuations of God. We're all born with gifts and talents. And some people are more fortunate than others to be able to be in schools, to have teachers that recognize it, that aren't intimidated by it, that don't want to control it or put a cap on it. And they can allow then that person to soar. You know, in ancient times, all of us, you and me as spiritual cousins, we would have gone to a mystery school. We would have been in class. We would have been able to develop our unique talents. So for me, I was not in that kind of environment. I felt very different, stood out, very unique. I was very deep, very philosophical. and people would go, what in the world are you talking about? You know, so it's a longer story than that, but that's kind of the gist of it, is that I didn't feel mirrored nor recognized. And so I felt very connected to nature and very aware. I was always very deep. As a young person, I would say things and people would say, you know, what is that? I mean, now we know it is Twitter, but then we didn't know what that was. And so, you know, it was hard. It was very hard to feel validated. And so in that space, I began to medicate my feelings, my gifts, my energy, and alcohol. And I'll tell you something that just hit me a few minutes ago as I was getting ready to call you. Today is my 26th birthday in sobriety. This day, the 23rd. Now we couldn't have planned that better if we tried. So, but I did medicate for a number of years. And so the premise of life wasn't always easy, was that it became even harder when I stopped being me to fit in, when I stopped resonating with who I was so I could be the chameleon and kind of just blend in to avoid the pain of standing out. And now I'm who I always have been. I just give myself permission to be it.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you why you labeled this low self-esteem during that phase of your life, because I when I think of some of the things you said about not fitting in and realizing that you were, you know, from a different mold, why do you call it low self-esteem, or was it that low self-esteem resulted?
I think when I think of esteem, I think of an energetic, thriving being. You know, it's kind of like the ethereal energy. Like for those rare people that have the ability to see energy, you can look at a baby plant and you can actually see the template in which the plant will become, okay? So when I think of esteem, I think of, you know, have you ever seen a little plant burst through the cement for life?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it has the strength and the invigorating spirit that it can burst through any obstacle. So when I identify with esteem, to me, that's that energy of our gift of nature, of our God gift. That's our thriving life. And we're not only gifted that from that yelp as a baby, I'm here, look out, I have needs, I'm ready, let's go. But we are destined to keep that same vibration throughout the course of our lives. Uniquely, though, we're not told that, and we're not energetically, especially in the box way in which people are told when you get to be a certain age, you're going to lose some of that you're going to have less assertiveness, you're going to feel less dynamic because of a certain age, because of certain things that have happened, when really esteem works the opposite. You know, esteem carries you, your spiritual essence, your intention. There will be more of you as you walk through tragedy and hardship, not less of. Does that make more sense?
Yeah.
And kind of lay it out better for your listeners?
Oh, yeah, it made sense initially.
Good.
I just wanted to ask, you know, why you labeled it as such, and that's a wonderful, wonderful way of sharing. I want to ask, too, in the same thing, you talked about on your website and kind of gave me a little indication, too, in the few minutes that we talked before the show opened, that there was an impact from traditional religion that was made upon you. And I'm wondering if, as you explained the pain that you felt on the inside and, again, the discomfort of not fitting in, was it because, too, that there were these paradigms and these rules that you spoke of that were shaping your condition, if you will, at that point in time, and you just felt an inability to break free?
To me, Silver Ray, the disconnect was that there was a disconnect. I was brought up in a deep-rooted Southern Baptist community, and I would go to all the services, whether willing or forced upon me. And I would hear the message, and I would hear the intention, and I knew that everybody really was into it and really meant what they were saying. I did not see the example match the message. I saw the message, I heard the message, but when it came to day-to-day life, the way my parents treated their children, the way that my neighbors treated their neighbors, the way that people treated each other in school, the way that the colors of the skin was treating the colors of the skin, or the religiosity of, if you're not a Baptist, then you're not really on the right track. And to me, the in Southern Baptist tradition, obviously they're talking about being saved by a Christ, but I didn't feel like any of us were being saved in day-to-day life. Mm-hmm. We had this ideal of an ultimate salvation, but to me, we were more into debating what we thought Jesus may or may not said versus the example in which he lived, the unconditionalness, the non-judgmental. I mean, Jesus hung out with some really interesting people.
Yeah.
And that's
how
he developed his ability to practice this essence of God that he alluded to all the time. And so then that's the part that was hard for me, is I didn't know, you know, at 10 years old how to say the word incongruent, but that's what I felt. It felt incongruent. And I would say, this is messed up, you know.
Yeah.
And so that was the biggest part of it, was feeling like I had a whole different kind of belief system than anybody else. And the other profound part about that I recognized is, and it's gone on to really help me be who I am and sit in the spaces of people that are different now. So it's all been good ultimately. But in that, it's like I discovered early on that also people weren't even comfortable with you asking questions. You know, I'd ask my grandmother, well, why do you believe that way? Why are you saying that? Oh, well, we just do. You know, and I'd say, well, why? I don't understand why. Well, listen, it would be better just accept it the way it is. And I would go, why? You know, so, and I think that for me, if we're comfortable with what we believe, we find pleasure in people asking us questions. We don't need to shut them down. To me, that reflects lower self-esteem and insecurity. Because if you're clear about who you are, then to be questioned, it's like an opportunity. Like, yay, I'm so glad you asked me that. You know, that
right.
kind of thing.
Right. Well, I'm glad you reflected on that, because I particularly think that there are conditions that we lock ourselves in because of what you just said, and that is we don't question it. We don't discuss the question, the validity. We don't question the utility. We don't question the fruitfulness. We don't question if it doesn't work, but okay, well, it's still right. Well, no, we might need to revisit it if it looks like it's not working. So I definitely ask you that so that I could get the response that you just gave. So as you went on your quest, because obviously you found yourself and your calling, you talked about we're celebrating your sobriety today, but how many years were you kind of in your wilderness, and what were you doing? What were you doing to investigate opportunities to learn and to grow?
I would say that in those inner years of the teenage years, there were a number of things that happened, and one of those was that my cousin, who was 4 years older than I was, he announced to his church that he was going to become a minister And that night he drove to the pizza place with three other friends, and he was tragically killed in an automobile accident that very few people would even have, you know, any damage at all. And that put me into a deep cycle of what it meant to be a good person. And, you know, good people die, and look what happened to Jesus, and look what happened to my cousin, and, you know, did I really want to be a good person? And I think on some subliminal or unconscious level, I think that's part of why I found the imitation of alcohol inviting and then smoking. It's hard to believe that I ever did either of those. And nature, from the moment I did that, nature told me, you do not want to do that. The first time I smoked, I went into full-blown tonsillitis. I mean, who does that happen to? I was, like, physically ill for 2 weeks. So my body said, girl, this is not yours to do, you know. But I did it. Mm-hmm. I'm a little stubborn, little rebel. That comes with the archetype of healer. So I did that. And then drinking was the same way. It just made me sick. It's terrible. Like, who would like this? But I said, no, I'm doing it. So if those were the teenage years that I had early blackouts. I definitely had an allergy to alcohol within my family system, those kind of things. But in those years, I had like a best friend, and I had a physical education coach, like the Tuesday with Maury kind of thing, a teacher that I could talk to, but not in depth about a lot of things, but just at least surface level that I felt like I had some connection. But I did a lot of poem writing in that time, playing the guitar, those kind of things. And just kind of realizing this is kind of how it is. And then fortunately for me, I met a man, last name Bliss, and he invited me to start reading different books. And he would bring me books. He just felt like I was his mission or someone he had taken on. And he would bring me different books like As a Man Thinketh by James Allen, Illusions by Richard Bach. And it was just mind-feeding. It was soul-feeding. And the depth was there, and the questions were there. And then he went on later to introduce me to a Unity community. And I went there, and I sat there that first day, and I went, this is home. I'm with people that are philosophical. And I'm with people that are willing to understand how, you know, God can personally work in their life, not some kind of heavy, intense, kind of ethereal, kind of no relationship, nothing really personal, but more in structure. And it started changing from there.
And how did you find your way to the great position of leadership that you hold now?
Well, when I was five, I got the message that I was to teach and speak in whatever way that revealed itself as an image to me as a little girl. I got that. And I couldn't really see, like, what is that, you know, physical. I mean, where I was with my culture, you know, keep in mind we're in the 60s. I mean, women weren't doing a lot of things. And certainly in the world I was growing up in, women didn't carry. I mean, it was basically a teacher, physical education teacher, guidance counselor, no ministry. Keep in mind, again, we didn't have internet. So with what I saw, you didn't have Joyce Myers out there then, different people, right? But it just kind of started unfolding on my path. And as the more and more I would say to my mom, this really needs to happen because I am really longing to feel that I'm moving forward, you know, towards the passion within me. And things started opening up. And then I became a minister of religious science. And then I went on from there. And then I had a lot of opportunities in the speaking genres, of all different types of speaking genres, and life coaching and those kind of things. And I've just been at it ever since. I have just continued to have a voice about, I've just always felt that I had something to say, even when I would hide from it. And I know you can relate to this too. I mean, when people say, oh, I'm so glad that you're so comfortable being a leader and that you, you know, you love being that. It's like, well, no, not always. You know, I would hide too. You know, I'd be like, I don't want to do this right now, or I don't feel like it. You know, I want to go hide in a corner like other people. But it always finds me. Either I find it or it finds me. And that path of resistance has so lessened because I know that this is what I am. And so I've accepted that. But I am as extroverted as I am introverted. I'm both. And I think that's part of what happens when you are a public person. It's very hard for people to understand, but you kind of have both of those things. I'm sure you do too.
Yeah, I get it. Can you share with us, I know you're making an impact on some important things that are important to you, societal issues. I know you have great regard and sensitivities in many areas. Tell us about those areas where you're reaching out through ministry to help other people in their lives.
Well, the deeper ministry, in addition to the fundamental teachings of unity, which includes, you know, honoring life and spirit and God, those kind of things, there is a whole other level of my foundation, Temple Hayes Ministries, and it's the creation of LIFE, L-I-F-E, Life Rights. And it was birthed in me in 2008. I was at Mega Institute, and I was with the Nobel Peace Laureates, and they were talking about the issues in today's times. And I had this huge epiphany reveal itself to me, this awareness that where we are as a culture is we have lost the inherent respect for life. And that is in nature. We overkill things. You know, people will say, well, you know, in scripture it says we have dominion over the animal kingdom. Well, yeah, but one would think at the time that was written and however way it was interpreted, if you look at it from the sense of Native American culture, yes, okay, you need the animal or the fish in order to sustain yourself. However, you don't need 50 that get thrown away because the consumption, the commercialization, the lives that are taken every year for no reason, with no sacredness, with no blessing, with no prayer over the food. So that's one area. The other is not honoring the animals that we have and the creatures and who they are. And just like we have apologized to the Aborigines, the Native Americans, all the Indian cultures, all the people of color, the African Americans, I know, I see the day in our lifetime that we will apologize to the animal kingdoms because of our ignorance. That's one thing. The other would be with the elderly population, how we've got to do better at the sustainability and honoring people that have contributed to society. It doesn't matter if you're famous. It doesn't matter if you are ordinary, middle class, upper class. We've got to do better at how we treat our elderly people and honoring them, the gifts they have, who they've been, what they are, putting them in a room and medicating them. We've got to do better. Our children, of course, all of that, our distribution, everything. I mean, Mother Earth, Father Sky, obviously feels the impact. And we're not destined to kill ourselves. We are not made in our DNA to kill another human being. It is not natural. And we are way off course. We are way off course. And we are creating a lot of new norms. And it must stop. Mm-hmm. We're so caught by celebrity-itis, and we're so preoccupied with one statement that Paula Deen made many years ago, that we get all sidetracked. We get distracted by what's really at hand right now. What do we need to focus on right now? Guns don't kill people. People kill people. And we've got to fundamentally get back to being sensitized and sensitive to what it means to have a brother or sister and what that is and how we can embrace that. And I have some ideas. I just need to get in with President Obama to talk about it, or somebody that has enough power that can do something about it. But some simple ideas that if we could use them, they could work to help us get the funding and the abilities to make a difference. So those are, as you can tell, I'm very passionate about it. No doubt.
Well, I'm glad you are. I'm glad you are. Many of us are, and I often have that same feeling. If I could just sit down with the people who can take some of these ideas and just cause them to run immediately, a lot of things really could change. You're absolutely right. Let's talk about, you know, when you were saying some of the things you were saying, it brought to mind, I think it was last week, if not the week before that, that there was some criticism about the Pope and some of the things that I guess the following were saying they felt was being ignored, some of the more controversial topics that have lingered for years and years. And he was quoted as saying something, and I'm really paraphrasing, that we really need to concentrate on things like you just talked about, not mm-hmm. just a bunch of controversy, that, you know, we need to be trying to do things and talk about things that impact people's lives, that help people, that, you know, what our real mission and calling is all about. And, you know, while a lot of the life's fluff is fun, for what it's worth, how can we continue to ignore what our eyes are seeing? It's not getting better, and we really are the ones responsible. You know, I don't think that what we see is a condition that has just been left to its own breeding. We certainly have the capability in this society, with all the intellect that exists, to really do something about what we see. We're just not doing it, is really what the
right.
bottom line is. We're just not doing it. And if anybody looks at it and thinks that's the case, then, you know, that definitely needs to be rethought. And
right.
as intelligent as we look around at life and see what human minds have done, we definitely can make an impact on the human condition as well. I agree. Well, let's talk about your publications, your radio show, and things that you are doing that reaches the hearts and minds, spirit of people on a real regular basis, in addition to your ministry. I know this is a part of it, but I want to talk about some of the things that really jumped out at me in regard to some of your teachings. And I know it's a reflection on some things that we've heard before, but I'm just particularly inspired and impressed by the things you said. But let's talk about the principle that you refer to as living life present, being present. And so we're switching gears a little bit, but I don't want to not get to these things before the show
mm-hmm.
is over.
You bet. Absolutely.
So let's talk about when we're looking at our individual lives. I promote this show as, you know, unlocking your intention. And
mm-hmm.
while that, for some of us, we understand exactly, it resonates in us. It makes us hungry to hear. How do you do that? For others,
yeah.
it's going to be like, what does that really mean? And so
right.
I'd like for you to talk about that, because I love opening up the thinking for anybody listening, that they can go, that's interesting. So share with us what being present means to you when you're teaching that to an audience.
Absolutely. Well, if we look at it just in its simplicity, when we think about the past there can be sadness or depression. When we think about the future, there can be anxiousness or anxiety. In the moment right now of the space of now, whether it's looking at a body of water, whether it's reflecting on an image on our computer screen, whether it's the breath, the presence of the breath, there is a calming. That's one level, is being in the now is a person that is awake and aware enough that they understand that life is about connecting the dots. And it's like a coloring book that we had when we were little, and it would tell you to connect the dots, and then you would have a form. And that's how our lives are, in manifesting and demonstrating, in the secret, in the law of attraction, in the successful life. That's how it works. And the person that is really good at connecting the dots understands that it is about being in the moment, to be attentive enough so I can make the dots make sense. That's one thing. And in that, also, it's like energy is right now. The wind is blowing right now. You know, a boat will not work on the energy of 3 days ago. It works on the energy of now, right? A kayak, the energy that is propelling now. And so when we look at from the premise of yesterday ended last night, you know, you hear people walking around, they're either so busy, I'm just so busy, so busy, so busy. And when people want to put that same old, whatever that means, that mantra on me, I go, please, I really don't want you to hold me that way. That's a non-relative way of holding me. I will be active all the days of my life, okay? I'll have my to-do list right by my bed when I'm checking out. You know, check, 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 checking out. That's on my to-do list. So I don't want to live in that mantra. All that is just a bunch of hype, and there's woundology underneath there. There's a martyrdom. I don't want to, that's not where I want to thrive from. I want to live the message of living in the present moment. So when someone's with me, I want them to feel that sense that I am grounded, that I am paying them attention, that they have my undivided awareness, and that I am there. The other part of it is energy comes from right now. So I may have had two hours sleep, you know, 3 days ago. When I'm standing in front of people, I have the energy of right now. And there's more than enough. We live in an infinite universe. And there is a plentitude of energy that's ours for the taking. But because we live in boxes, and because our believability is what so many other people have told us, if you don't get a good night, if you don't have this, you don't have that, you know, if you're a certain age, well, of course you're having a hard time, so you're just thriving on, you know, I've never seen a tired bird over by the ocean. You know, they're not just walking along like, I'm just so worn out, I don't know how I do it, you know, but they're thriving on the present. So those are some of the passions. You know, we're not given rations of energy. In my travels, I used to be amazed at how many people hadn't even started their week, and they were already talking about how tired they were going to be by Friday. Well, how do you know that? You're not even there.
Yeah.
You're
right.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. In fact, as you were speaking, I was thinking of a time years and years ago where the whole concept of being present was being presented to me, and I wasn't doing that. I wasn't being present. And I remember very much, you feel like you are being busy because you are thinking so futuristically about your life, you know, what you're doing,
mm-hmm.
and your plan,
mm-hmm.
and putting all of that together. Well, at the same time, there is this, and I'll call part of it ignorance and ignoring of things that are important in the now. And you can truly miss so much opportunity because you're doing that, because you won't put your roots down, you won't put your feet on the ground because you're so focused on this
something or place that you're trying to get yourself to, that you miss the energy of the moment, the purpose often within the moment, the joy within the moment. And I'm telling you, I'm glad I got it when I got it, because I could have missed so much more. But I know for myself, and I say this so in case anybody else is experiencing that and thinking you're just being so awesome, I think there was a pain factor underlying some of what I wanted to avoid, because staying in the moment meant I had to deal with the painful issues that were occurring. And if I were going to dwell there, then I was going to have to do something about that as well. But I think
Absolutely.
It's important, and I'd love to hear what you have to say about it, because once I began to realize that pain has its purpose and pain has to be dealt with, that healing has to come if you are you know, going to, you know, nurture yourself and understand yourself and, you know, all of the things that go along with it. But you really can't if you're so focused on some other futuristic thing or some other past thing and not dealing with the present. It's a lovely place to live once you do
Absolutely.
Get it.
Absolutely. You're so right, Spiritual Cuz. Listen, I think that one of the things that would help people if they look in the idea of quadrants, because I don't want people to get confused, because we're not talking that you don't need self-care and nurturing and rest and, you know, nutrients and those kind of things. But the way I like to do it is, let's say that I feel that I'm off. Let's say that I'm feeling anxious or a little neurotic or cranky or, you know, whatever, or a sense of sadness. How I like to measure my life, be checked in and kind of tuned in and tapped in, would be that I would reflect, in the last 24 hours, how have I been impacted physically? So that could mean rest. It could mean taking care of myself. It could mean, have I had sugar? Because that sets me off. It could mean several different things, right? Physically, it could mean what's aching in my body. Emotionally, which is where you're coming from, what unresolved emotional stuff, luggage, am I carrying around? What kind of pain do I need to sit with so I can walk through it and be on the other side of it? What part?
Right.
Because pain is our friend. It's our best friend. And our bodies don't lie. We can pretend to ourselves, but our bodies, you know, a lot of the physical pain and ailments, I didn't say all, but a lot of them are unresolved pain that we're carrying. And so we have red energy in our bodies. So we have arthritis, we have hurting, we have aching, those kind of things. So emotionally, what is on your mind, what needs to be dealt with, the physical, the emotional, the mental. What kind of language when you look in the mirror? Who do you say you are? What do you see? Do you see what's right? Do you see the things that are great? Or do you see the what's wrong? Do you see the what isn't? That's huge. The mental language of what we say about ourselves throughout the day that really zaps your energy. And to what we say about other people. You can be really alive and vibrant and thriving, and then you can start talking about somebody, and if you're in tune with yourself, you'll see your energy and your vibration totally go down. So that's a piece of it. And then spiritually, are you lined up with a philosophy and a methodology that works for you? Because the one of your parents may not be yours or your grandparents. It's got to be the one that resonates with you, your spirit, your natural belief systems, because that's what Jesus said, Buddha, doesn't matter your faith. Everybody understands it's done unto you as you believe. Otherwise, you're a person being done unto, because you're not lined into the greater truth of who you are as a natural being. So that's a big piece of it. That's why even though I might practice more Eastern traditions as far as health and Chinese medicine, herbology, homeopathics, all of acupuncture, those kind of things, I'm very big in all that. I always have been. And yet I see the wisdom in Western too. But I don't make people wrong that just practice Western. Because if they believe it will work for them, I'm not messing with that. Otherwise, then I become just another self-righteous person. Does that make sense?
Right. You absolutely are making sense. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Great, great points. Let's talk about being intentional. You know, I love that because we have in several ways as we've talked. But again, I want to hear what you have to say. And if there, again, are, you know, several steps that you can tell us that really emphasize what this means to us and what it can mean for us as we live out healthier, more purposeful lives, I'd like for you to share that.
Mm-hmm. Well, the simple way would be to just have a personal mission statement, you know, to know with yourself that you have an intention of who you are. You know, I have two or three that are just my anchors because to me, my walking and my talking, because as I shared earlier on the show, that's what guided me. You see, the things in your life that you feel are your crisis are really there to develop you. And so even though, yes, had kind of some tough times in my childhood and things like that, it really molded me to do the work that I was born to do. So there's no accidents, right? And so to have a mission statement to me is to be a difference maker, right? And to be the best I can be. Well, that sounds like a bunch of sweet little simple words, but go to live it every day. Go to live it every day. That's a different thing. And so it's like, how am I lined up with that? How am I being a difference maker today? And so at the end of the night, I, as an intentional spirit, I'll look at what were my intentions. Was I a difference maker? Did I even notice the person that was serving my food at the restaurant? Did I call in by name? Did I say, thank you for being here? Appreciate you. Did I offer increase to the people that I met in my interchange? Or was I so preoccupied with some other idea or ideal? You know, so those kind of things, being the best I can be. When people met me, did they get that I am a vibrancy of life? Am I living my message? And so that's what an intentional spirit is about, is walking your truth, walking your message. I've met a number of authors that I was disappointed when I met them in person. I like their book better. And see, I don't want people to say that about me. I don't want people to say, God, I like her book better than her because she doesn't live her book. I don't want that said about me. I want people to know, God, they're lined up. You know, she's lined up. It doesn't mean that we don't have off days and everything. We are human. But overall, our intention is to live what we say we are and to be. You know, how people do little things is how they do everything. Our sister, our other spiritual cousin, Maya Angelou, you remember, she said, Oprah, when people show you who they are, believe them. I want to show people who I am by what they see, not necessarily by just what I'm sharing, you know, or teaching, but that they get it, that it all goes together. But I'm sure that's happened to you too. You know, you've met people and you're so excited and you go, okay, because it's not lined up. Something's off. Yeah. Right. I don't want it to look like a ghostwriter wrote my stuff, you know?
I hear you. I hear you. Well, I tell you, everything that I have read about you, you're all that and then some. Tell us what you think about, when we talk about being intentional, And I know you know this with the great numbers of people that you encounter, and I'm sure they ask you, have asked you more times than you have wanted to respond, how they overcome their own insecurities and their fears. I find that, and I'm often surprised still, so many people truly don't believe in themselves and the wonderful creation that they are and all the God-given things that you just automatically have within you that
right.
will cause you to succeed. What do you say to people that are dealing with their, and their real fears to them at that point, you know, people who overcome that, you kind of, you know, see it a little bit differently, but what their hesitancies are that they told themselves about why they cannot or will not achieve something is real to them. And then they take a step and they're literally terrified because they
right.
feel they're going to fall on their face, they're going to fail, and people are going to laugh, and, you know, they're going to hate themselves and all kinds of ridiculous self-talk that goes on. How do you respond when people seek your counsel for inspiration and they're dealing with fear?
Well, I think one part of that is that, you know, we've gone from a culture that wasn't doing much self-reflection to sometimes we just way over self-help and become way over too analytical. One of the things, it's like if you're a way, an analogy to think about is that if you are walking in the dark, I was in the Army Reserves, and it made them really happy to get you up at 4 o'clock in the morning so you could go guard somebody's house. I mean, even if anybody wasn't even there. And it would be pitch dark. It'd be blacker than black. And if you thought about and looked so far ahead, it would be terrifying. But if you took the flashlight and just walked the steps right in front of you with where the light was, then you could see one step at a time and move forward in that direction. I think that there are times that we need to be aware of emotionally what's stopping us, but I think we also need to hold the space that we don't always have to wait to overcome everything. If I waited till I overcame everything, I would never have done anything. If I waited till I felt like my life was perfect, good luck. You know, if I had to overcome every problem to move forward with saying something, speaking something, teaching something, that's the reason often that we have challenges, is so that we can go through them, grow from them, and therefore then offer compassion, which means compassion. If you look at the word, it means come, pass it on, compassion. And so we're destined for this whole process, you see. And I don't think that, I mean, if we had waited on Martin Luther King to have it all figured out, well, we wouldn't have had the civil rights movement. We wouldn't be where we are now. You and I wouldn't be having this conversation because he
That's
didn't
true.
Figure it all out. He didn't wait. He didn't have any problems or challenges at home or trying to figure out how to raise his children or what he was just going to do at his church. He had a dream, and that's the intentional spirit. He had a dream that one day, and he could see what he saw, and he knew that he needed to focus on that and let the creative forces of the universe decide how it could unfold, one step, one walk in the dark at a time. So
that's awesome.
That's the part of what we can offer our humanity, is to focus on what the dream is. We don't ever know how it's going to unfold. The person we're going to talk to, I had to call the cable company last night because I had taped a program, and none of the programs that had been taped would play. And so I call in, and we're waiting on the signal to upload and all this. And so he starts having this conversation of how am I and where do I live and everything. I said, where do you live? He went, Texas. I said, oh, well, your voice, you don't sound like you like it. Oh, no, I don't like it. I said, well, where do you want to go? I don't know. Well, where do you think you'd like it? I have no idea. Well, what would happen if you entertained the idea of where you would want to go? if you would entertain the idea of where you want to want to go, you would put it in motion. Until you're clear, I said, the universe doesn't know where to send your package of goodness. Once you're clear, it will come. And he went, oh, yes, ma'am, I know that. And I thought, oh, yeah. If you knew that, if you really knew that, you would have already done something about it. So in our super self-analyzing society, when people tell me they know something, a lot of times when they're too quick to say they know it, I like to sit with it and go, okay, if you know it, then you grow it and then you show it. Then I want to, then I'll be convinced. But until you grow it and you show it, you don't know it. Because if what we knew changed us with all the information we have bombarded at us now, we would have already changed. So unless we integrate it and become an intentional spirit with what we know and we have intentions of what we're going to do about it, it's just a bunch of fluff. Hoopty-doopty, fluffy fluff. Fluffy-doo. I don't know if those are words, but...
I love it. Well, I have one other question before we'll have people directed to your website. You said something on your website, too, and you alluded to a little bit. I'd just like for a little reflection on that. Do you think, you said on your website something about the hows and whys of everyday life, and I kind of got from that we can really block ourselves from becoming our most magnificent self if we're always having to know exactly how or exactly the why to everything. And it can, I think, create a lot of hesitancy, even procrastination, because we feel like we do need those answers all the time. But you just talked a little bit about how they have a natural order, I guess, of unfolding, would you say, as you begin taking your steps? You tell us what your insights and reflections are about that.
Mm-hmm. Well, even if we look at scripture, eyes have not seen nor ears heard, nor has entered into the hearts of humanity the things that God has in store for those of us that love. And so from an open heart, we have such an immense ability to attract into our lives that is which is ours to be and to become. And so for me, the simple formula is I say what, and I allow God or spirit or the universe and whatever words one uses to say how. So I say what, and I allow God to say how. And so where most people get is they shut off and shut down the what because they go to their head and they start trying to figure out, well, can I afford it? Probably not. You know, has it ever happened to me? No, so it's probably not going to happen now. You know, those kind of things. So if we would just be in the what and allow it to happen. A good friend of mine many years ago was relocating to a city in Maine, and she wanted to teach children piano. And I said to her, I said, okay, I'll pray for you, you know, that you'll have lots of kids. And she said, well, I don't have a piano. And I said, okay, I see you finding a piano on sale. And she said, oh, no, my what is I want to have a piano, and I don't want to pay for it, and I want to have a Steinway Grand. And so we prayed about it. We focused on it. I'm sure she had other people on her team as well. She went to the concert hall. They have a concert there four times a year. The master of ceremonies at intermission announced, ladies and gentlemen, we have a problem. We have a piano here that we use four times a year. Do you know anybody that would be willing to store this piano 361 days of the year? We could really use your help. We'll pay for the moving and we'll pay for the tuning, you see. But she drained it. She held it. She didn't get in the how-tos of the why or if or, you know, it had never happened to me. We're so ingrained in our society to think about just money and just green exchange that often we shut down the dream because we don't see how it can happen. And there's a multitude of ways in which the eyes can see and the heart can hear and the eyes can and the ears can hear what can unfold if we're paying attention, you know.
That is just amazing. Thank you for sharing all of that. And I appreciate so much your presence on the show today. It's been so very empowering. Let's tell people where they can learn more about you and get your books.
You bet. Well, they are welcome to join anytime on unitycampus.org. That's the work of the spiritual community that is offered in many different ways in our society. That's one way. My own personal website is Temple. My birth name, Temple Hayes, HAYES.org, and that gives a wide range of the work that I do and leads them into different areas. And about the book that I wrote, Life Rights and How to Speak Unity, and now I'm working on my next one. So that'll be coming next year.
Anything else you'd like to share before we wrap up our conversation?
I'll just share a quote that I wrote in 1991. It goes like this. This is the greatest moment that you and I have ever lived. We have never been better or greater or more alive than we are right now. As long as we believe there was a better yesterday or that tomorrow holds for us some guarantee, we're missing out on the greatest moment that we'll ever have, and that's right now. Right now is where we have the power to change our minds, to make a decision, to let go of something that we no longer want because we truly are empowered individuals. I've really enjoyed being on your show today. Thank you for having me as your guest.
And thank you. And what a wonderful, wonderful insight and affirmation to leave with everyone. I'll reach out again to you this afternoon. If I miss you, Temple, please, I'd love to just chat with you again just for a few minutes. I love you for doing the show with me today. It's been everything I would have wanted it to be to share with listeners. My mission is to empower people with ideals and thoughts and ways to improve themselves and their lives, and that really has been done today. Thank you so much. I'll talk to you again
soon. Bless you.
Have a wonderful day.
I will. Blessings.
Enjoy your day. Talk to you soon.
You too. Bye-bye.
And I want to thank all of you as well for hanging in there with me today. It's been awesome, hasn't it? Boy, what nuggets we've got to soar on from that conversation. Please tell your friends about Foxology. And as I always say, we got some powerful conversations going on here. You can only learn and grow from it. And that's something that Temple just said, that when you know the intention, you grow it, and it shows. I want to leave that with you today. Get that intention in your mind very clear. When you know it, you grow it, and you'll show it. You be blessed, and I'll look forward to talking to you next time. Thanks for listening.